Welcome to the Nerds Domain Podcast, where we explore the geeky side of life. This week, we're looking at a movie that's important to the modern film industry. It's the Nerds Domain on the Criterion Collection.
Come on in, it's about to begin.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Nerds Domain Presents Matt. No, crap cakes. Welcome back to the Nerds Domain Podcast. This is not the Nerds Domain Presents Masks of Nyarlathotep.
No, it is not.
You are listening to a Criterion Collection version of this podcast. I'm here with Shirley.
Hello.
And Justin.
Howdy.
Who hopefully has unmuted his mic.
I have.
It's always questionable.
Do you hear me?
Jesse.
Yes, we can hear you.
Are you
there?
Okay. I can't hear you.
Wouldn't surprise me if you couldn't.
All right. And we are going to talk about a movie called The Royal Tenenbaums. This is a Wes Anderson joint from 2001. Let me read the synopsis. Jesse, real quick, what are Criterion Collection movies?
They're movies that made a large impact on the film industry and are generally, well, I'm not going to say they're good because some of them aren't, but typically pretty good.
They're important to the modern film industry and people believe that they're, you know, classics.
See, that's what I said. I was right.
All right, so here's the synopsis. Royal Tenenbaum, played by Gene Hackman, and his wife, Etheline, played by Angelica Houston. Whenever I see the word name Angelica, I always think of the Rugrats.
Oh, yeah. I never watched the Rugrats.
Had three children.
What?
Yeah, sorry. Well, she's not of that. She's not of our generation, Jesse. She's of generation. She's of the greatest generation.
A little wiser than you are.
They had three children: Chaz, Margot, and Richie. And then they separated. Chaz, played by Ben Stiller, started buying real estate in his early teens and seemed to have an almost preternatural understanding of international finance. Margot, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, was a playwright and received a Braverman grant of $50,000 in the ninth grade. And Richie, played by Luke Wilson, was a junior champion tennis player and won the U.S. Nationals 3 years in a row. Virtually all memory of the brilliance of the young Tenenbaums was subsequently erased by two decades of betrayal, failure, and disaster. The Royal Tenenbaums is a hilarious, touching, and brilliantly stylized study of melancholy and redemption from Wes Anderson. This cast, let's start there. This is a huge cast. We have Alec Baldwin doing all of the narration.
Yes. Amazing. I love this man's voice.
We've got Gene Hackman in probably like the worst person ever role.
This role made me realize that he is a method actor.
Yeah. I really enjoyed him, though. Angelica Houston is fantastic. There is, I think, melancholy is a good way just to describe this movie, this whole movie. There's not a lot of happiness and joy. There's just acceptance of what is. And we get Gwyneth Paltrow and Ben Stiller and Luke and Owen Wilson, both the Wilson brothers.
Yes, and the whole time I was wondering, who's the older brother?
Owen Wilson also co-wrote this with Wes Anderson.
Yes, he did.
We get Bill Murray and Danny Glover. And like that is the core of the cast. And they're kind of, well, and I forgot, Stephen Lee Shepard plays Dudley Heinzenbergen, which is he's around the whole time, and I don't know if he's acted much beyond that, but he's fantastic in this. So, oh, he was in Freaks and Geeks. I guess he was kind of a big deal then.
I thought he looked familiar.
So, Jesse, have you seen this movie before today?
No.
Or before this viewing, I guess?
Yeah, this was a first for me.
Okay. And Shirley, we had watched this a couple months ago, and then I made you rewatch it.
Been a while.
Not too bad for you.
But that was your first time watching this.
A couple months ago, yes.
Yeah. So this is my probably eighth
good
viewing
night.
Of this. I like
really?
This movie.
How do you even stand it?
Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, it's not that it's a bad movie. We'll get into that later.
Right.
Yeah, it's just depressing.
Look at this. Look at this cast, right?
I could have just stayed home and talked to my family if I wanted to watch.
Yeah, but there wouldn't have been a redemption story at the end, then, Jesse.
I could have thought about my past childhood, and it would have been like.
So we got a great cast. Mm-hmm. This is what I think is Wes Anderson's best film. Rushmore is okay. I did not want to see Life Aquatic because I was afraid it was going to be too much like this and very sad.
Have you seen it? You haven't seen it yet at all?
No.
It's all right. It's another weird one, but I'm glad I watched it.
Okay.
Unlike this one.
And then, you know, it's...
Did he have anything to do with Truman?
The Truman Show?
Yeah.
No, he did not.
Because it's kind of very similar.
How so?
Following Jim Carrey around like that?
No. Jesse, you liked Moonrise Kingdom, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Wes Anderson wrote that.
Yeah. So you said Wes Anderson.
And directed it.
And I thought Wes Craven. And I'm like, I don't remember him doing any of those.
Yeah, no. A little bit different characterization. Yeah, a little bit different there. I really like this movie. I'll start there. I think the cast is fantastic. I think we get to see all of the cast break what they normally do. Ben Stiller is not funny. He's kind of tragic.
Very.
And sad.
Everybody's tragic.
Well.
Like, the whole thing is tragic.
Yeah, there is nothing.
There is no sun. I just realized through all of the
You don't see
whole
the sun
thing,
one single
there's
time.
There's no sun.
Do you notice that every time they ride in something, it's either the bus or those terrible gypsy cabs?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
There is never a good cab there. And everything looks like it's run down like it's the 70s, and this movie takes place in 2001. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. The story itself is about a family stuck in the past. Like, none of them grew past being 12 and fantastic. None of them.
Right.
Yeah.
And the mother went on to do stuff, but it's glossed over because it doesn't matter.
The children are still stuck.
Yeah, and Gene Hackman never did anything other than get stabbed in Calcutta once, and then out in front of his house once. Same dude. Stabbed him both times.
Swiss Army knife.
So, I don't know. I understand why you guys say this movie is depressing, and I don't disagree with you, but I think this movie is fantastic.
I'm not disputing that its awesomeness in what it is. It's just, yeah, I don't like.
What? Tom, come on.
I can't get on board with watching this 8 times.
Well, you have to remember this is 8 times
and
over,
you know,
over 17 years. I've watched this 8 times, and 2 of them have been with you. So 6 more besides
maybe
that.
Maybe because it makes me want to be cathartic. Because, like, this show is like, you know about my mom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, maybe we just haven't grown up, and none of my nieces and nephews have grown up, and we haven't moved past my mother's death. And a lot of that is kind of brought back, and then there's the whole family, like, the dad at the end, like, is really, really reaching out and trying to reconnect with everybody.
That's what I like about this movie, is it takes this melancholy that just hangs over this family, and the person that put it all there is the person that tries the hardest to get rid of it, and it's a redemption story for him.
It's a fairy tale.
It is.
It will never happen.
I don't know about that. I mean, some people do that. But, yeah, no. It is a fairy tale, and that redemption story and righting the wrongs of his past at the best, the only way he can.
Right.
That's what appeals to me here. Plus, Bill Murray is not funny in this and is amazing.
No, he's not. What does he remind me of? I remember him being in, because he's very dour.
He reminds me of Spengler. Spengler out of from the Ghostbusters.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
There is a little bit of Spengler in there.
And the happiest character in this is Danny Glover, who plays a tax accountant who works for Angelica Houston's character. And asks her at the very beginning of the movie to marry him.
Oh, my God. Does nobody laugh ever in this movie?
Nope.
There's not a smile or a laugh.
There are smiles. He smiles a lot at her.
He does. But I think he's the only one. The Tannenbaums don't smile at
her. No, they don't. No, they do not. They smirk a little bit here and there. but they don't smile. Angelica Houston does. She smiles.
Yes, she does.
And she smiles at her children, but it's always a sad smile. There's a lot to be said here in this movie, just from, like, these things we're picking. You know what? Of all the movies that we've seen on the Criterion Collection, this is the one that I think you could deconstruct and you could get the most out of.
Right.
Because there's a lot of storytelling going into the acting and not just the words, but what we're seeing.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to throw out a theory for you guys. So we get the Tannenbaums, and we get Eli Cash, who was Richie Tannenbaum's best friend, lived across the street.
Yep.
I think he's a Tannenbaum. I think Royal had an affair, and that is his kid.
Why do you think so?
Well, one, he looks just like Richie.
That's not fair. They're brothers in real
right.
life.
But that's a choice when casting the actors.
Oh.
And because he wants to be part of that family so much, it's almost like he knows. And he's even more broken than the Tannenbaums.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I always and had the feeling that the Gwyneth Paltrow's character, who was constantly said she was adopted.
Yeah.
Was his sister.
Ooh.
Because they had the same hair color. They kind of have the same body type. I mean,
ew. Because that means ew.
Yeah. So
how about we don't go down that road?
So Chaz, played by Ben Stiller, was married and has two kids. His wife died in a tragic plane crash.
Which his kid survived.
That he and his kid survived, and their dog Buckley.
He wasn't in it, was he?
Yes.
No,
yeah.
It was just the kids
and the
dog. I
just thought it was the wife and kids. And
I know. I literally just watched this movie. It says.
So did I.
He survived. He was in the plane as well and survived along with the kids. I swear.
Okay.
So.
You've seen it more than I have.
But more importantly, the dog survives. We know that.
Which is about the saddest thing ever.
And then
for
we get Margot, who is played by Gwyneth Paltrow. She marries Bill Murray's character, who is much older. Well-established, and clearly deeply infatuated with her and willing to do whatever
it takes to make her happy.
And I think that's a clear father issue boiling up there, because Royal always kept her very much at arm's length.
Yes.
And so she gravitated towards someone that would worship and adore her, even though she didn't really want to be
and
in a relationship.
Much older.
Much older.
She's 22.
Well, no, she's 34 in this. Yeah.
She was 22 when she met Eli.
Who?
She
who?
Was...
You're going to confuse characters. Eli Cash is the guy across the street.
Right. On the bus, they were kissing. It said she was 22.
Oh, no, that was 32.
Oh, I
because she was cheating on her doctor husband.
Yeah.
And he's a psychologist of some note and had written books and has a weird subject study going on with this kid that is just phenomenal.
I felt like when the very first time that we watched this and he, you know, moved the screen out in front of Dudley and he's like, "Now I want you to make this look like this." Well, Dudley's always wearing his earbud.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, he's going to shock him. This is going to be like Ghostbusters all over again, this poor there, nerd kid.
There is that moment. Did you get that moment too, Jesse?
Yeah.
I was like, no, don't shock him.
Actually, he smiles in that when he's like, oh, how interesting, how bizarre. And yeah. He's smiling while he writes it. It's very macabre what gets smiles out of the people in this. And we can't forget that Mordecai the Falcon is in this. He's very important.
Mordecai's amazing.
Mordecai's gorgeous.
You notice how he changes colors, right? They specifically state that he did it.
Yeah.
Apparently, the bird flew away during filming and was caught by a citizen in New Jersey, and they demanded a price for his return.
What?
So they just replaced it instead.
No way.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Aww.
And then the youngest is Richie, and Richie is in love with his sister, his adopted sister, Margot, and flees to go on a trip around the world. He leaves, and he's broken and torn apart by that, and we get to see all three of these children torn apart by different things and stuck in a position where they can't handle life anymore. Chaz is terrified of everything. Richie can't handle his life, and Margot is unhappy because she married someone she didn't love.
I'm not sure she's ever been happy.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Well, when you put on your first play at your 11th birthday party and your dad craps all over it like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. Introduces you as the adopted one.
Right.
Every single time.
So, the story progresses as Danny Glover's character asks Angelica Houston to marry him. And we get to see the progress there, because that's when Royal comes back in the picture, because he hasn't spoken to anybody in 3 years in the family. And he comes back because Pagoda, the guy that stabbed him in Calcutta and will later stab him in the movie, is still working for Etheline in the house, and he's reporting back to Royal about what's going on in the house.
Yes.
And then Chaz moves back in because
he's a spy.
Chaz is convinced that they will not survive a fire in his apartment or anything else that might happen there. And then Margot moves back in because, you know, because she wants to be away from her husband. And then Richie comes home from the boat and moves back in when his father gets quote unquote sick.
Sick.
So Royal uses this sickness, this stomach cancer, to worm his way back in the house, and then to try and rekindle something with his family. And honestly, with the boys, it was too much, but he was trying. He was trying to get them to be adventurous and have excitement in their lives.
Because he knew that Chase was going through a breakdown.
Right,
like
right.
He was becoming
overly protective, like ultra protective.
Yeah, so like harmfully introverted.
Yeah. And so we progress as we see Royal thrown out when he gets caught. And it's his own fault. Tic-tacs, yeah. But then we see him slowly redeem himself over the last, what do you call that, act of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Where he sincerely wants to be part of the family and apologizes. And he tries to mend fences with Danny Glover's character, who's going to marry his now ex-wife. And like he puts forth a lot of effort to really correct what he's doing wrong. And we get to see him become someone that's at least somewhat normal. I won't say he's admirable, but he at least acknowledges what he's done and how he's affected these people, and he's trying to correct it. I don't know. I'd love this movie, guys. You guys are just not excited about
it at all.
It's
a good movie. I think it's very depressing and very emotional, and
it's not what I go in to watch a film for.
Yeah.
Okay.
I go to watch a film to escape realism.
Yes. And that's something that I noticed. You like pick out a lot of things that have to do with realism. Like you like Friends and you like
Friends is not realistic. Two of those people are always unemployed and they still can afford an apartment in New York City. There's nothing real about that.
Okay. And How I Met Your Mother.
Also not realistic.
Well,
nothing is that legendary all the time. No, I like something that has a basis in reality, but then tweaks it because it's like me watching someone else also go off into a fantasy world, so I don't feel bad about my own fantasy worlds.
Yeah, and it does take the standard norms and extreme them a little bit.
It does. It does.
I don't think they extreme them enough.
You don't think they extreme them enough?
Yeah,
like there wasn't enough melancholy in this. Like Richie committed suicide.
Attempted suicide. There's a small difference there. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. Surely.
There is. There's, you know, that thin line between life and death.
Yeah, those scars were nasty.
It was. Ugh. Yeah.
It was a bit much.
Yeah. So we get to see Buxley. So Owen Wilson's character, Eli Cash, has a huge drug problem, comes to the wedding of, Etheline and
Henry Sherman,
completely full of drugs and wrecks his car into the house, almost hitting the boys, but, Royal saves them. But he does kill the dog, Buxley. And that kind of is the catalyst for Chaz to get help,
mm-hmm.
Eli to get help.
Yep.
And then that it's really like the band-aid that starts to bring the family together at
right.
that moment.
And it's that catalyst that makes Chaz realize, you know, one, he needs help, but two, hey, my dad, maybe my dad's not so bad.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, what is it? Like, is it a year later or less than a year?
So, Chaz's wife dies in 2001. It's on her gravestone.
Mm-hmm.
Royal dies in 2001. So, there's no time there. This had to have been, like, 2 months later or something.
Yeah. I never noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it happens quickly. I think the time frame is off. It probably was 2002, realistically. Mm-hmm. But still, it's a very quick time frame. He actually fixes everything, has a heart attack, and passes away. And they gloss over that part because that's not what the story is about.
Right.
The story is about the redemption and then what that means to the family and how that affects them.
Right.
So
I totally agree with that.
Shirley cried. We both teared up some during this movie.
There's some moments that are like heart-wrenching.
There are.
You know?
Yeah.
I didn't think he was going to pull through the suicide thing.
Yeah, well, had I not seen this, you know, 7 times before.
There were some parts that I did forget, and I was just like, oh yeah, there's that. And I totally forgot about the suicide part.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it was just too...
It's intense.
Traumatic.
It's intense. He finds out that Margot's been has all these secrets, like, has been married before, nobody knew. Has been smoking since she was 12, nobody knew. Had
multiple lovers,
including Eli Cash, his best friend. Nobody knew.
Yeah.
And he can't handle that truth about her and how that relates to him. He has long hair that's always up in a like headband and then the big, thick beard. He cuts all of it off and then uses the razor as he's starting to shave to slit his wrists. And just very
intense.
Jarring and intense. Yeah, just... Yeah. Tough.
So what were the cinematic points for this movie that made it part of the Criterion Collection?
Oh, I love the whole chapter thing.
Yeah. The book comes up and then you can read the book.
Yeah.
And it tells you what's about to happen on the screen.
Yeah, and I made sure I tried to read as quick as I could, too.
Yep.
Right. I think, honestly, the scene that does it for me that I think makes this important is the scene after the car wreck, as they start with the priest being put into the ambulance and pan across everybody dealing with this situation.
Right.
And that is all one shot, which is kind of awesome, dealing with each individual person and showing their strengths. Like, you know, the doctor's only worried about making sure people get married, and you know, the tax adjuster is talking about why it's important to go ahead and put this down and recoup the deductible on the home and homeowners insurance. And the grandmother, Angelica Houston, is looking after her grandchildren because she wants them away from the emotionally scarring place where the dog got killed.
Right.
And Royal is trying to make sure that Chaz has something, and he doesn't know what to do, so he buys the dog, the Dalmatian, from the firemen to give to him. And there's an exchange there where Chaz says, "I've had a tough year, Dad." And Royal goes, "I know, son, you have." And it's not like there's no judgment. It's just an acceptance of, yeah, you have. Like, you have a reason to be breaking down.
Right. And I think that was one of the whole points to the whole movie that Royal was trying to make. He was trying to bring out the realization that, hey, not everything is fine.
Right.
Everything is messed up.
And it's okay.
And we're not dealing with it. Yeah. And something needs to break or it will never be okay.
Yeah. And he, like he says, like, it's an acceptance there, like, it's okay to not be okay after your wife passes in a tragic plane wreck.
Right.
Like, there's no reason to not be okay. So that scene there, I think, is really important. The transitions, not just the chapters, but the transitions between things are really solid. If you'll notice, like, they're like, Richie shows up at the hotel that Royal ends up working at. And he's like, you know, I need to ask your opinion. And then immediately the door's opening for them to go outside onto the roof. And those transitions are quick and keep the story moving, but put us where we need to be to see what's going on. I think it's really solid directorial choices that keep us moving like this.
Right.
that answer your question?
Yes. Well, I was thinking, like, what are the, like, professionally, why is it in there? Not, like, what are
I think Wes Anderson is – so here's the reality. Film critics love Wes Anderson, and they were going to put something of his in here. Rushmore is not good enough. I really don't think it is. Life Aquatic was a play on this. It literally stars Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff in the future wasn't there yet, so this was kind of Wes Anderson's second big movie right after Rushmore, and they grabbed it because it has a solid, very concise script.
Storytelling?
Yeah, it's his storytelling and his directorial style. And I think they're right. I think that there's something to learn and admire in what Wes Anderson does. He also did Fantastic Mr. Fox and Moonrise Kingdom. Jesse has talked about Moonrise Kingdom before on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. It's in my top 10 movie list.
So, I mean, Wes Anderson does what he does well. It's just, what is he doing? So, you know, I think that's what we're looking at here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anything else you guys want to say? The costume design was very specific for each character. They made very specific choices. Like, Chaz is always in an Adidas tracksuit.
Right, which I found very, like, it never explained, or maybe I just miss it. Like, how does he go from the suits to physical fitness?
Because physical fitness is staying healthy, which means you can't die. You're harder to kill. Like, it's
so
another reaction.
Did his wife's death bring
that was
that
my
about?
That was my impression. And the tracksuits have a business power behind them because they're specifically chosen to look a certain way. Like, you choose that look. Would be my assumption. And then at the funeral, he's been wearing red tracksuits all movie, the whole movie. At the graveside of Royal, he's in a black tracksuit. So, I think that. And then they make very concise choices. Each character has a wardrobe and they stick to it the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Owen Wilson wears that Indian or that whatever, that shag jacket the whole time.
It's like a... It's like the cowboy
that?
Coat that
cowboy,
Marty McFly Fly wore in Back to the Future Part 2, 3.
Maybe.
Yeah, the one that was terrible and was clearly not for cowboys. And then Luke Wilson is in that camel jacket the whole time, too. So, yeah, I mean, the costuming choices were very specific and deliberate. So, yeah.
I feel like they matched each person's mood, too. I mean, of course, there was the professionalism of the psychologist and the accountant.
But it was very old school, too. Else, you notice that everything Bill Murray was wearing was like a 70s version of what a psychologist would wear.
Mm-hmm.
And Angelica Houston's wore... Everything was stuck in the past. Everything was stuck in the past. The costuming, the cars, the technology, everything was stuck in the past.
Yeah.
Even
the weather.
Honestly, like, everything, you know, except for the weather, like, who has hawks? Who keeps hawks in New York City? Nobody. Except this family that is stuck in the past.
Right.
Like, the dresses, the way they dress is stuck in the past. Like, the cars they're looking at, all of everything. It's just an underlying theme in the movie, is everything's in the 70s or 80s. Everything. I don't know. I like that. Now that I'm thinking about it, I like that even more. Hey, thanks, guys. You're making me like this movie even more. So I think we've touched on this pretty well. Out of 5 Dalmatian mice.
Oh my gosh.
There are Dalmatian mice in this that Chaz bred. And they're cute little mice, little white mice with little black dots on them, and they're kind of in everything. Like,
they are. They just keep popping up.
Yeah. So out of 5 Dalmatian mice, Jesse, what do you give this movie?
Well, I was going to go 2.5, but now I really can't because I don't want to cut one of them in half. I'll give it a solid 3. It's not overly my type of movie, but I can see why it's viewed as a classic.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of scenes in it that I'll remember. Like I said, the suicide scene alone saves it. I mean, that was one of the most realistic depictions of that I've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shirley, what about you out of 5 polka dot Dalmatian mice?
3.5, 4. I mean, if I was really, really depressed and I needed something to, you know, kind of jar me out of that.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you say 3.5, 4?
Yeah.
Which one? You can't be 3.5 and 4.
4. So I don't cut a little mouth in half.
I'm going to go a solid 4 on this. I don't, I've seen this 8 times in, I think I saw this in the theater. So 8 times in 17 years. 2 of them were very deliberate. I introduced this to Shirley so that she would watch it again, or so that she would watch it for Criterion. And then we watched it because it was on HBO, and I thought, you know, what an easy way to watch the movie instead of having to go find the Criterion version.
Right.
I think that this movie is well deserving of its place. Wes Craven needs something in the Criterion collection. I think this is
Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson.
So you've seen this twice. Was one of them the Criterion Collection, or were both of them?
There is no specific Criterion Collection version
of
this.
Okay, so I was going to see if there was anything different.
No, it's a set director's. Wes Anderson only makes the movie he wants to make.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, he doesn't hardly cut anything ever.
Yeah, he's very specific in what he does and how he does it for those.
That's why this was a 2-hour movie.
Oh my gosh. It's not even 2 hours, it's just under 2 hours. So I don't know why you're complaining. It's not that bad.
No, it isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not any Dillinger's Dead.
Right.
True. This is leaps and bounds above some of the worst things we've seen on this.
Oh. So our next episode is going to be the end of March. And I'm not sure what's coming out. That will be an immediate movie review at the end of March. I'm not sure what's coming out on our movie draft, but we will be watching something attached to that because, you know, we like that. That's always fun. And then keep an ear out for our catapult shots. Those are coming out here, there, and everywhere. I hear Shirley just put one out since this is in the future.
This is in the future.
For Red Sparrow. Look at that. I just put pressure on you. You have to do it now. But your Red Sparrow. It's about a Russian spy lady. Oh, Ready Player One will be our next immediate movie review.
Okay.
We will do that as a immediate movie review at the end of March. Not just because it's a great movie, but because I want to see it anyway. So yeah, Shirley is going to watch we're going to watch Red Sparrow, and she's going to do a catapult shot. Is a movie about a Russian spy woman and her training and stuff. It'll be good.
She's a ballerina.
It's kind of, not completely, but kind of the story of Black Widow in Avengers.
Oh, okay. Because you said Black Widow and I saw Black Swan and I was like, no,
not the same.
Not the same at all.
Well, I'll tell you, we have some other podcasts coming out. We've got Nerds Domain South putting out Tome Travelers and Dice Warriors. We've got the Nerdsdom Presents Masks here of Nyarlathotep. You should be checking those out. Go over to nerdsdom.com and check those out there. And so coming soon, There Are Four Lights will be back as soon as we get our library kind of shuffled into the right spots. Otherwise, thank you guys for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week. And that will do us tonight on the Nerds Domain podcast. Remember, you can email us at nerdsdomain@gmail.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter at facebook.com/nerdsdomain and twitter.com/nerdsdomain. You can also check out our site at nerdsdom.com. Be sure to sign up for the newsletter while you're there. You can head over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. We want to thank Josh Schopp for the music. And don't forget to support us at patreon.com/nerdsdomain or check out our t-shirts over at tpublic.com/users/nerdsdomain. Have a great night!